The kitchens were in uproar. Half the court had ended up there, in most cases for the first time. The place was as crowded as a street market, through which the servants tried to go about their business as best they could. The fact that one of them seemed a little unclear as to what his business actually consisted of was quite unnoticed in the turmoil.
"Did you smell him?" said Lady Two Streams. "The stink!"
"Like a hot day in a pig yard," said Lady Peach Petal.
"I'm pleased to say I have never experienced that," said Lady Two Streams haughtily.
Lady Jade Knight, who was rather younger than the other two, and who had been rather attracted to Cohen's smell of unwashed lion, said nothing. The head cook said,
"Just that. Big lumps. Why doesn't he just eat a cow while he's about it?"
"You wait till you hear about this devil food called sausage," said the Lord Chamberlain.
"Big lumps." The cook was almost in tears. "Where's the skill in big lumps of meat? Not even sauce. I'd rather die than simply heat up big lumps of meat."
"Ah," said the new Lord Chamberlain, "I should think very carefully about that. The new Emperor, may he have a bath for 10,000 years, tends to interpret that as a request."
The babble of voices stopped. The cause of the sudden silence was one small sharp noise. It was a cork popping. Lord Hong had a Grand Vizier's talent for apparently turning up out of nowhere. His gaze swept the kitchens. It was certainly the only housework he had ever done. He stepped forward. He'd taken a small black bottle from out of the sleeve of his robe.
"Bring me the meat," he said. "The sauce will take care of itself."
The assembled people watched with horrified interest. Poison was all part of the Hung Hung Yi's court etiquette, but people generally did it while hidden from sight somewhere, out of good manners.
"Is there anyone,"
said Lord Hong,
"who has anything they would like to say?"
His gaze was like a scythe. As it swung around the room, people wavered and hesitated and fell.
"Very well," said Lord Hong. "I would rather die than see a barbarian on the imperial throne. Let him have his big lumps. Bring me the meat."
There was a movement in the ground, and the sound of shouting and the thump of a stick. A peasant scuttled forward, reluctantly wheeling a huge covered dish on a trolley. At the sight of Lord Hong, he pushed the trolley aside, flung himself forward, and grovelled. "I avert my gaze from your orchard in a favourable position. Countenance, O Lord." Lord Hong prodded the prone figure with his foot.
"It is good to see the arts of respect maintained," he observed. "Remove the lid."
The man got up, and still bowing and ducking, lifted the cover. Lord Hong upended the bottle and held it there until the last drop had hissed out. His audience was transfixed.
"And now let it be taken to the barbarians," he said.
"Certainly, your celestial inkbrush, willow frond, righteousness."
"Where are you from, peasant?"
"Bespelagic, O Lord."
"Ah, I thought so."
The big bamboo doors slid back. The new Lord Chamberlain stepped in, followed by a caravan of trolleys.
"Breakfast, O Lord of 1,000 years, he said. "Big lumps of pig, big lumps of goat, big lumps of ox, and 7 fried rice.
One of the servants lifted the lid of a dish.
"But take my tip and don't go for this pork," he said. "It's been poisoned."
The Chamberlain spun around.
"Insolent pig, you will die for this."
"It's rincewind, isn't it?" said Cohen. "Looks like rincewind."
"Got my hat here somewhere," said Rincewind. "Had to stuff it down my trousers."
"Poison," said Cohen. "You sure?"
"Well, okay, it was a black bottle and it had a skull and crossbones on it, and when he tipped it out it smoked," said Rincewind, as Mr. Savaloy helped him up. "Was it anchovy essence? I don't think so."
"Poison," said Cohen. "I hate poisoners. Just about the worst sort, poisoners. Creeping around, putting muck in a man's grub."
He glared at the Chamberlain.
"Was it you?"
He looked at Rincewind and jerked a thumb towards the cowering Chamberlain.
"Was it him?"
Because if it was, he's going to get done to him what I did to the mad snake priests of Start, and this time I'll use both thumbs.
No, said Rincewind, it was someone they called Lord Hong, but they all watched him do it. A little scream erupted from the Lord Chamberlain. He threw himself to the floor and was about to kiss Cohen's foot until he realised that this would have about the same effect as eating the pork.
Mercy, O celestial being, we are all pawns in the hands of Lord Hong.
What's so special about Lord Hong, then?
He's a fine man, the Chamberlain gibbered. I won't say a word against Lord Hong. I certainly don't believe it's true that he has spies everywhere. Long life to Lord Hong, that's what I say.
He risked looking up and found the point of Cohen's sword just in front of his eyes.
Yeah, but right now, who are you more frightened of? Me or this Lord Hong?
Lord Hong.
Cohen raised an eyebrow.
Oh, I'm impressed. Spies everywhere, eh?
He looked around the huge room and his gaze came to rest on a very large vase. He sauntered over to it and raised the lid.
You okay in there?
Yes, said a voice from the depths of the vase.
Got everything you want? Spare notebook? Potty?
Yes.
Would you like, oh, let's say about 60 gallons of boiling water?
No.
Would you rather die than betray Lord Hong?
Can I have a moment to think about it, please?
No problem. It takes a long time to heat the water in any case. As you were, then.
He replaced the lid.
One big mother, he said. That's one big river, Genghis, said Mr. Savaloy.
The guard rumbled into life.
Just you watch this vase, and if it moves again, you do to it what I once did to the green necromancer of the night, all right?
Don't know what it was you did, Lord, said the soldier.
Cohen told him. One big river beamed. From inside the jar came the noise of someone trying not to be sick. Cohen strolled back to the throne.
So, tell me a bit more about Lord Hong, then, he said.
He's the Grand Vizier, said the Chamberlain.
Cohen and Rincewind looked at one another.
That's right, and everyone knows, said Rincewind, that Grand Viziers are always...
Complete and utter bastards, said Cohen. Dunno why. Give 'em a turban with a point in the middle, and their moral what's name just gets eaten away.
I always kill 'em as soon as I meet 'em. Saves time later on.
I thought there was something fishy about him as soon as I saw him, said Rincewind. Look, Cohen...
That's Emperor Cohen to you, said Truckle. I've never trusted wizards, mister. Never trusted any man in a dress.
Rincewind's all right, said Cohen.
Thank you, said Rincewind.
But a bloody useless wizard.
I just happened to risk my neck to save you. Thank you so very much, said Rincewind. Look, some friends of mine are in the prison block. Could you... Emperor?
Well, sort of, said Cohen.
Temporary, said Truckle.
Technically, said Mr. Savaloy.
Does that mean you can get my friends somewhere safe? I think Lord Hong has murdered the old Emperor and wants them to take the blame. I'm just hoping he won't believe they'll be hiding in the cells.
Why in the cells? Said Cohen.
Because if I had the chance to get away from Lord Hong's cells, I would, said Rincewind fervently. No one in their right minds would go back inside if they thought they had a chance to get away.
Okay, said Cohen. Boy Willie, one big mother, go and round up some of your mates and bring those people here.
Here, said Rincewind. I wanted them to be somewhere safe.
Well, we're here, said Cohen. We can protect them.
Who's going to protect you?
Cohen ignored this. Lord Chamberlain, he said, I don't expect Lord Hong will be around, but in the court was a guy with a nose like a badger, a fat bugger he was, with a pink hat, and a skinny woman with a face like a hat full of pins.
That would be Lord Nine Mountains and Lady Two Streams, said the Lord Chamberlain. You are not angry with me, O Lord?
God bless you, no, said Cohen. In fact, mister, I'm so impressed I'm going to give you extra responsibilities.
Lord?
Food taster, for a start. And now go and fetch them other two. I don't like the look of them at all.
Nine Mountains and Two Streams were ushered in a few moments later. The merest glance from Cohen to the untouched food would have passed entirely unnoticed by those who weren't watching for it. Cohen nodded cheerfully at them.
"Ate it," he said.
"My lord, I had a large breakfast. I am entirely full," said Nine Mountains.
"That's a pity," said Cohen. "One big mother, before you go off, just see Mr. Nine Mountains over there and make some room in him so he can have another breakfast. The same goes for the lady, too, if I don't hear chomping in the next 5 seconds. A good mouthful of everything, understand? With lots of sauce."
One Big River drew his sword. The two nobles stared fixedly at the glistening mounds.
"Looks good to me," said Cohen, conversationally. "The way you're looking at it, anyone would think there was something wrong with it."
Nine Mountains gingerly put a piece of pork into his mouth.
"Extremely good," he said indistinctly.
"Now, swallow," said Cohen.
The Mandarin gulped.
"Marvellous," he said. "And now, if your excellency will excuse me, I..."
"Don't rush off," said Cohen. "We don't want you accidentally sticking your fingers down your throat or anything like that, do we?"
Nine Mountains hiccuped. Then he hiccuped again. Smoke appeared to be rising from the bottom of his robe. The horde dived for cover just as the explosion removed an area of floorboards, a circular part of the ceiling, and all of Lord Nine Mountains. A black hat with a ruby button on it spun around on the floor for a moment.
"That's just like me in pickled onions," said Vincent.
Lady Two Streams was standing with her eyes shut.
"Not hungry," said Cohen.
She nodded. Cohen leaned back.
"One big mother?"
"It's River, Cohen," said Mr. Savaloy, as the guard lumbered forward.
"Take her with you and put her in one of the dungeons. See that she has plenty to eat, if you know what I mean."
"Yes, Excellency."
"And Mr. Chamberlain here can push off down to the kitchen again and tell the chef he's going to share what we eat this time, and he's going to eat it first. All right?"
"Yes, indeed, Excellency."
"Call this living?" Caleb burst out as the Lord Chamberlain scuttled away. "This is being emperor, is it? Can't even trust the food. We'll probably be murdered in our beds."
"Can't see you being murdered in your bed," said Truckle.
"Yeah, 'cause you're never in it," said Cohen.
He walked over to the big jar and gave it a kick.
"You getting all this?"
"Yes, sir,"
said the jar. There was some laughter, but it had an edge of nervousness. Mr. Savaloy realised that the horde weren't used to this. If a true barbarian wanted to kill someone during a meal, he'd invite him in with all his henchmen, sit them down, get them drunk and sleepy, and then summon his own men from hiding places to massacre them instantly in a straightforward, no-nonsense and honourable manner. It was completely fair. The get-them-drunk-and-butcher-the-lot-of-them stratagem was the oldest trick in the book, or would have been if barbarians bothered with books. Anyone falling for it would be doing the world a favour by being slaughtered over the pudding. But at least you could trust the food. Barbarians didn't poison food. You never knew when you might be short of a mouthful yourself.
"Excuse me, Your Excellency," said Six Beneficent Winds, who had been hovering. "I think Lord Truckle is right. I know a little history. The correct method of succession is to wade to the throne through seas of blood. That is what Lord Hong is planning to do."
"You say? Seas of blood, right?"
"Or over a mountain of skulls. That's an option, too."
But I thought the imperial crown was handed down from father to son," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Well, yes," said Six Beneficent Winds. "I suppose that could happen, in theory."
"You said once we were at the top of the pyramid, everyone would do what we said," said Cohen to Mr. Savaloy.
Truckle looked from one to the other.
"You two planned this?" he said accusingly. "This is what it's all been about, isn't it? All that learning to be civilised, and right at the start you just said it was going to be a really big theft. Eh? I thought we were just going to nick a load of stuff and push off. Loot and pillage, that's the way."
"Oh, loot and pillage, loot and pillage. I've had it up to here with loot and pillage," said Mr. Savaloy. "Is that all you can think of? Looting and pillaging?"
"Well,"
"'They used to be ravishing, too,' said Vincent, wistfully.
"'I hate to tell you, but they've got a point, Teach,' said Cohen. "'Fighting and looting, that's what we do. "'I ain't happy with all this bowing and scraping business. "'I ain't sure if I was cut out for civilization.'
Mr. Savaloy rolled his eyes.
"'Even you, Cohen, you're all so dim-witted,' he snapped. "'I don't know why I bother. "'I mean, look at you. "'You know what you are. "'You're legends.'
The horde stepped back. No one had ever seen Teach lose his temper before.
"'From legendum, which means something written down,' said Mr. Savaloy. "'Books, you know, reading and writing, which incidentally is as alien to you as the lost city of E.'
Truckle's hand went up, a little nervously. "'Actually, I once discovered the lost city of E.'
"'Shut up! I'm saying... Ugh, what was I saying? "'Yes, you don't read, do you?' You never learned to read. Then you've wasted half your life. You could have been accumulating pearls of wisdom instead of rather shoddy gems. It's just as well people read about you and don't meet you face to face because, gentlemen, you are a big disappointment.
Rincewind watched, fascinated, waiting for Mr. Savaloy to have his head cut off. But this didn't seem about to happen. He was possibly too angry to be beheaded.
"'What have you actually done, gentlemen? "'And don't tell me about stolen jewels and demon lords. "'What have you done that's real?'
"'Truckle raised a hand again. "'Well, I once killed all four of the—'
"'Yes, yes, yes,' said Mr. Savaloy. "'You killed this and you stole that "'and you defeated the giant man-eating avocados of somewhere else. "'But it's all—' It's all stuff. It's just wallpaper, gentlemen. It never changes anything. No one cares. Back in Ankh-Morpork, I've taught boys who think you are myths. That's what you've achieved. They don't believe you ever really existed. They think someone made you up. You're stories, gentlemen. And when you die, no one will know. "'Because they think you're already dead.'
"'He paused for breath, and then continued more slowly.
"'But here you could be real. "'You could stop playing at your lives. "'You could take this ancient and somewhat rotten empire back into the world. "'At least,' he trailed off, "'that's what I'd hoped. "'I really thought that perhaps we might... "'actually achieve something?'
"'He sat down. "'The horde stood staring at its various feet, or wheels.
"'Can I say something? "'The warlords will all be against you,' said Six Beneficent Winds. "'They're out there now with their armies. "'Normally they'd fight amongst themselves, but they'll all fight you.'
"'They'd rather have some poisoner like this Hong instead of me,' said Cohen. "'But he's a bastard.'
"'Yes, but he's their bastard, you see.'
"'We could hold out here. This place has got thick walls,' said Vincent. "'The one's not made of paper, that is.'
"'Don't think about that,' said Truckle. "'Not a siege. Sieges are messy. I hate eating boots and rats.'
"What?" said Mad Hamish. "He said we don't want a siege where we have to eat boots and rats, Hamish."
"Run out of legs, have we?"
"How many soldiers have they got?" said Cohen.
"I think 600,000 or 700,000," said the taxman.
"Excuse us," said Cohen, getting off the throne. "I have to join my horde."
The horde went into a huddle. There was an occasional,
"What?"
in the hoarse, whispered interchange. Then Cohen turned round.
"Seas of blood, wasn't it?"
he said.
Yes, said the taxman.
The huddle resumed. After some further exchanges, Truckle's head poked up.
"Did you say mountain of skulls?" he said.
"Yes, yes, I think that's what I said," said the taxman.
He glanced nervously at Rincewind and Mr. Savaloy, who shrugged.
Whisper, whisper. "What?"
"Excuse me?
Yes?"
"About how big a mountain? Skulls don't pile up that well."
"I don't know how big a mountain. A lot of skulls."
"Just checking." The horde seemed to reach a decision. They turned to face the other men.
"We're going to fight," said Cohen.
"Yes, you should have said all that about skulls and blood before," said Truckle.
"We'll show you whether we'm dead or not,"
cackled Hamish. Mr. Savaloy shook his head.
"I think you must have misheard. The odds are 100,000 to 1, he said.
"I reckon that'll show people were still alive," said Caleb.
"Yes, but the whole point of my plan was to show you that you could get to the top of the pyramid without having to fight your way up," said Mr. Savaloy. "It really is possible in such a stale society. But if you try to fight hundreds of thousands of men, you'll die."
And then, to his surprise, he found himself adding, "Probably." The horde grinned at him.
"Big odds don't frighten us," said Truckle.
"We like big odds," said Caleb. "You see, Teach, odds of 1,000 to 1 ain't a lot worse than 10 to 1, said Cohen. "The reason being," he counted on his fingers, "one, your basic soldier who's fighting for pay rather than his life ain't going to stick his neck out when there's all these other blokes around who might as well do the business. And two, not very many of them are going to be able to get near us at one time, and they'll all be pushing and shoving. And," he looked at his fingers with an expression of terminal calculation. Three, said Mr. Savaloy, hypnotised by his logic.
"Three, right. Half the time, when they swing their swords, they'll hit one of their mates, saving us a bit of effort, see?"
"But even if that were true, it'd only work for a little while," Mr. Savaloy protested. "Even if you killed as many as 200, you'd be tired, and there'd be fresh troops attacking you."
"Oh, they'll be tired too," said Cohen cheerfully.
"Why?"
"Because by then, to get to us, they'd have had to be running uphill."
"That's logic, that is," said Truckle approvingly.
Cohen slapped the shaken teacher on the back.
"Don't you worry about a thing," he said. "If we've got the Empire by your kind of plan, we'll keep it by our kind of plan. You've shown us civilization, so we'll show you barbarism."
He walked a few steps and then turned, an evil glint in his eye.
"Barbarism? Ha! When we kill people, we'd do it there and then, looking them in the eye, and we'd be happy to buy them a drink in the next world. No harm done. I never knew a barbarian who cut up people slowly in little rooms or tortured women to make them look pretty or put poison in people's grub. Civilization? If that's civilization, you can shove it where the sun don't shine."
"What?" "He said, shove it where the sun doesn't shine, Hamish." "Ah, I've been there."
"But there is more to civilization than that," said Mr. Savaloy. "There's music and literature and the concept of justice and the ideals of..."
The bamboo doors slid aside. As one man, joints creaking, the horde turned with weapons raised. The men in the doorway were taller and much more richly dressed than the peasants, and they moved in the manner of people who are used to there being no one in the way. Ahead of them, though, was a trembling peasant holding a red flag on a stick. He was prodded into the room at sword point.
"Red flag?" whispered Cohen.
"It means they want to parley," said Six Beneficent Winds.
"You know, it's like our white flag of surrender," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Never heard of it," said Cohen.
"It means you mustn't kill anyone until they're ready."
Mr. Savaloy tried to shut out the whispers behind him.
"Why don't we just invite them to dinner and massacre them all when they're drunk?"
"You heard the man. There's 700,000 of them."
"Ah, so it did have to be something simple with pasta, then?"
A couple of the lords strode into the middle of the room. Cohen and Mr. Savaloy went to meet them.
"And you too,"
said Cohen, grabbing Rincewind as he tried to back away. "You're a weaselly man with words in a tight spot, so come on." Lord Hong regarded them with the expression of a man whose ancestry had bequeathed to him the ability to look down on everything.
"My name is Lord Hong. I am the Emperor's Grand Vizier. I order you to quit these premises immediately and submit to judgment."
Mr. Savaloy turned to Cohen.
"Ain't gonna," said Cohen.
Mr. Savaloy tried to think.
How shall I phrase this? Genghis Cohen, leader of the Silver Horde, presents his compliments to the Lord Hong, but..."
"Tell him he can stuff it," said Cohen.
"I think, Lord Hong, that perhaps you may have perceived the general flow of opinion here," said Mr. Savaloy.
"Where are the rest of your barbarians, peasant?"
he demanded. Rincewind watched Mr. Savaloy. The old teacher seemed at a loss for words this time. The wizard wanted to run away, but Cohen had been right. Mad as it sounded, it was probably safer to be near him. Running away would put him closer, sooner or later, to Lord Hong, who believed that there were other barbarians somewhere.
"I tell you this and this only," said Lord Hong. "If you quit the Forbidden City now, your deaths, at least, will be quick. And then your heads and significant parts will be paraded through the cities of the Empire so that people will know of the terrible punishment."
"Punishment?" said Mr. Savaloy.
"For killing the Emperor."
"We ain't killed no Emperor," said Cohen. "I've got nothing against killing Emperors, but we ain't killed one."
"He was killed in his bed an hour ago,"
said Lord Hong.
"Not by us," said Mr. Savaloy.
"By you," said Rincewind. "Only it's against the rules to kill the Emperor, so you wanted it to look as though the Red Army did it." Lord Hong looked at him as if seeing him for the first time, and less than happy about doing so.
"In the circumstances," said Lord Hong, "I doubt that anyone will believe you."
"What will happen if we yield now?" said Mr. Savaloy. "I like to know these things."
"Then you will die very slowly in interesting ways."
"That's the saga of my life," said Cohen. "I've always been dying very slowly in interesting ways. What's it to be? Street fighting? House to house? Free for all? Or what?"
"In the real world," said one of the other lords, "we battle. We do not scuffle like barbarians. Our armies will meet on the plain before the city."
"Before the city what?"
"He means in front of the city, Cohen."
"Ah, civilised talk again. When?"
"Dawn tomorrow."
"Okay," said Cohen. "It will give us an appetite for our breakfast. Anything else we can do for you?"
"How big is your army, barbarian?"
"You would not believe how big," said Cohen, which was probably true. "We have overrun countries. We have wiped whole cities off the map. Where my army passes, nothing grows."
"That's true, at least," said Mr. Savaloy.
"We have not
heard of you," said the warlord.
"Yeah," said Cohen. "That's how good we are."
"There is one other thing about his army, actually," said someone.
They all turned to Rincewind, who'd been almost as surprised as they were to hear his voice. But a train of thought had just reached the terminus.
"Yes?"
"You may have been wondering why you have only seen the generals,"
Rincewind went on slowly, as if working it out as he went along.
"That is because, you see, the men themselves are invisible."
"Yes.
Ghosts, in fact. Everyone knows this, don't they?"
Cohen gaped at him in astonishment.
"Blood-sucking ghosts, as a matter of fact," said Rincewind. "After all, everyone knows that's what you get beyond the wall, don't they?"
Lord Hong sneered. But the warlords stared at Rincewind with the expressions of people who strongly suspected that the people beyond the wall were flesh and blood, but who also relied on millions of people not believing that this was so.
"Ridiculous!
"You are not invisible, blood-sucking ghosts," said one of them.
Cohen opened his mouth so that the diamond teeth glinted.
"He's right," he said. "Fact is, we are the visible sort."
"Ha! A pathetic attempt," said Lord Hong. "Ghosts or no ghosts, we will beat you."